Welcome to the May NJEDA Board Meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it is their turn to speak. Please be advised that today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending in person will be acknowledged to speak first, then by Teams, and then by phone. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press star then one on your telephone keypad to be placed into a queue to provide comment. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. I will now turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, can you read the open public meeting notice, please?
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger, the Bergen Record, and the Trentonian at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and the meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Tim. Fabiola, can you conduct the roll call, please?
Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chairman Donald Barlow.
Here.
Doc Weinrich.
Here.
Bill Alagio.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Maciel Medina Ferraro.
Present.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Marcia Marley.
Here.
Robert Schimko.
Here.
Aaron Cruz for the Executive Branch.
Here.
Roberto Soberanis for Commissioner Roberto Acero-Angelo.
Present.
Manuel Pulido for Commissioner Justin Zimmerman.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean Montserrat.
Here.
Thank you. We are now going to move to approving the minutes from the last meeting. Before you are the minutes from the April 9th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. I want to remind board members to please state your name for the record when making a motion or a second. With that, can I hear a motion to approve the April 9th board meeting minutes, please?
Fred Dumont, motion.
Thank you. All right, Fred, I'll consider that a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. Now some brief chairman's remarks. First of all, thank you to board members on the phone for bearing with us for 10 minutes as we all made our way back over here from the very exciting Netflix groundbreaking. Welcome to the NJEDA May board meeting. Since the enactment of the Garden State Film and Digital Media Jobs Act in 2018 by Governor Phil Murphy, production spending in New Jersey has exploded, creating family-sustaining job opportunities, supporting small businesses and communities across the state, and attracting major film production studios. Combined with the generous long-term incentives through the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program, a wealth of local talent and diverse filming locations, New Jersey is now considered the birthplace, New Jersey long considered the birthplace of film, is poised to reclaim its position as a top production destination. Earlier this morning, the NJEDA board joined Governor Murphy, Netflix CEO Ted Sarandos, and other state and local leaders at the groundbreaking of Netflix flagship production studio on the East Coast at Fort Monmouth, which will feature 12 sound stages and production support facilities across a 292-acre parcel when complete. The transformative project and similar studio developments like the 1888 Studios in Bayonne are a testament to New Jersey's momentum as a hub of media production and complement other exciting initiatives from the NJEDA and the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission that will continue to bolster this important industry. In March, the board approved the NJ Filmworks program and signed MOUs with Montclair State University and Brookdale Community College to expand film and digital media workforce development initiatives, helping New Jerseyans obtain the skills needed to capitalize on the industry's economic opportunities. Last week, the NJEDA opened applications for the NJ Filmworks program, which will strengthen and diversify the state's film and digital media talent pipeline with a particular focus on New Jersey's overburdened communities. Earlier this month, the NJEDA and the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission partnered with the Screen Alliance of New Jersey to bring together industry leaders, local vendors, and other stakeholders for the first ever NJ Film Expo, further highlighting how the industry supports small businesses and communities across the state. Through ecosystem building events, workforce development initiatives, and support for transformative studio construction, the NJEDA continues to expand its toolkit to ensure residents, small businesses, and production companies in the state can benefit from the continued success of a strong film and digital media industry. Now, with that, I'll turn it over to Tim for his CEO's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. Thanks for accommodating to switch its time and location to be here, given we had the extraordinary event a few minutes ago with Netflix just down the road to kick off the demolition and construction of their campus here at Fort Monmouth. You've got a written CEO report in your pack. Given the hour and given that we've got a lot to get through and that we've actually got two guest speakers that are going to join me as part of my CEO report, I'll keep it pretty brief. Other than to say, it's busy and there's a lot going on. One thing I'd highlight is that Emma, Andrew Gross, and I are fresh back from the Persian Gulf, or Arabian Gulf, I think it's called now. We had a great trip led by the Governor's First Lady, and she's New Jersey, to Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the Kingdom of Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates in both Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Spent an hour kind of recounting it. I won't, but it was an extraordinary trip. I don't know, big brand for Andrew, but I think it's eye-opening in a lot of regards. One editorial comment, I think that region is going to be more relevant to the next 50 years of our economic trajectory than the last 50 years, for sure. There's a ton of investment, tons of you couldn't go 2 feet without talking about artificial intelligence and data centers and film and television, a lot of things we're here talking about today. So a really good trip. We also talk a lot about innovation. Abu Dhabi in particular has a pretty thriving startup ecosystem. We signed an MOU with one of their accelerator and incubator partners called Hub 71. 71 is the modern Emirate Kingdom was Emirate Federation was founded. So a really, really cool trip and lots of good follow-up. Lots of things happening in between these meetings. Of course, you have the board dashboard that I won't go through in detail, but I will highlight a couple things that have happened since our last meeting. We have been celebrating Small Business Week was last week. We highlighted via a press release the extraordinary amount of work and effort and resources that we provided to small businesses over the last several years, more than $1 billion now, including pandemic relief. Shout out to Christina and her team, Ty's team, for all their great work in supporting small businesses all throughout the state. We launched two really important applications in the last couple of weeks. One is the FEED program, which is a really important food security program, which got tons of applications. We need a bigger vote, I think, probably for how we're going to figure out how to solve that equation. So stay tuned for probably an ask around that at some point in the future. But a really, really important innovative program around not just doing good and helping people in need of facing food insecurity, but looking at system change pilot programs to begin to narrow those gaps over time. We also, on the inclusive growth front, launched the ESOP program last week, I think it was, or maybe the week before. Shout out to Michelle, her team. That's a really important way of thinking about employee ownership as a wealth creation vehicle that comes from and stems from the wealth disparity task force that Governor Murphy convened in 2021 that was chaired late grade Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver, and that work is carried on in her name as we seek to continue to attack and try and narrow unacceptable inequalities in our economy. We've also we celebrated, and this is a preview of an item we have on the agenda today. A number of us visited a cannabis dispensary right on the Trenton Ewing border, and then we had a roundtable celebrating Cannabis Awareness Month, which happens to be in April around 420. For those of you who get the pun, Ty hosted, and I was a panelist at for a number of really, really cool stories of businesses that we've directly supported that are now doing really well, open for business. They're making a lot of money, paying a lot of taxes, employing a lot of people. So it's a good testament to that very targeted investment. We have a proposal for your consideration later to extend and sort of bring about the next generation of cannabis supports. Lastly, on the innovation front, we cut the ribbon last week on the second Strategic Innovation Center in Newark, NJII, part of NJIT. That along with HACS is one of our 10, those are two of our 10 strategic innovation centers. We have some items for you today to advance those that we'll continue to push forward on. I'm going to bring Clark up in a moment. I want to comment on Netflix at Fort Monmouth, but I want to do that when Kara's here because I have a lot of nice things to say about her. I don't want to wait until she wanders back from her big party saying appropriately nice things about her. So I'll come back to Kara and Netflix at Fort Monmouth in a moment. But I did want to highlight two things. Bruce, can I put you on the spot first on Brew Dating? Since we were last together, you all were kind enough to approve an emergency support program for businesses impacted by the shutdown, or the impairment or predating, particularly in Morris County. Really proud, and it would be easy to take for granted the fact that we can stand up a program like that on a dime and run it seamlessly. And that's overwhelmingly due to Bruce's incredible expertise in starting back in Sandy and running up through COVID and for Henry and Ida and Route 80 and whatever comes next, because there'll be something that comes next, I promise. So I want to give the floor to
Keith.
Exactly. But I want to hand the floor to Bruce just to give a quick update on how the Route 80 grant program has gone. And then Clark Branowell.
Real quick. So in total, we launched Tier 1 and Tier 2. Tier 1, if you remember, was a 5-mile radius. We had 527 applicants in that tier. To date, we have approved 201 of them for $1.4 million and dispersed 160 of them for $1.1 million. And this will be on the slide later because we're going to ask for a little amendment to the report or to the program. But everyone in that program for Tier 1 has been notified. So if there's anything outstanding, remember we talked about all of the various pieces that we were doing electronically, doing the reviews. So if they didn't pass any of those tests, then we sent out an email telling them exactly what they needed so they could provide that information back to us. So everyone has been reached out to. Tier 2, we're waiting on some more information from our sister agencies. Once we get that information from Tier 2, that whole process will kick off again for all of the approval process and then the review process and the declaration process. So 818 total, a little bit over $5.2 million. That's a February. But to date, we have, like I said, 201 approved for $1.4 million and 106 dispersed for $1.4 million.
Bruce is characteristically modest, so I will brag on his behalf. We took applications starting at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You had approvals in people's inboxes by the early afternoon on that Friday?
Yeah, Friday and disbursements.
And disbursements. People talk a lot about government efficiency. It's pretty efficient.
You know, and we don't do it without the partnership of everyone internally but externally as well. So it allows taxation of internal IT across the board. It's just not me and my team. It's everyone across the board.
Questions for Bruce on Route 80? We'll have an item on Route 80 stuff in a moment, but anything on? Great. Thank you. More importantly, for all the work. I'm going to bring up Clark. We've also talked a lot at this board and at our retreats and such about program evaluation and the impact of our program and what happens once you approve all the money and the investments that come from this table. One of the longstanding programs is the NOL program, which has a much longer name, but we call it the NOL program. And Clark, who runs that program so well, is going to give us a quick update on a study we commissioned and what it says.
Sure. Thank you. Good to see everyone. Clark Smith, the Tech Innovation Team. And this is the perfect time to discuss the impact assessment for NOL as we're in full swing with NOL season, the application for 2025 by May 1st, and legislatively, they're all due on 2/30th. I was unaware that long name is Technology Business Tech Certificate Program, but not sure so that's that. It's the NOL program, and it's very unique to New Jersey. We're the only state that has something like this. Now, the most basic explanation here that I could give you is if we took your standard company that makes sales, you can reduce that by your expenses and you're taxed on the remaining amount. But when we're talking early tech and biotech companies, they have a significant amount of losses that almost always exceed sales if they have any sales whatsoever. So they have no tax liability and they just accrue those losses. So what NOL does is allow biotech companies to make a tax credit out of those losses and then sell them to another company that has tax liability. So the buyer gets a little haircut on their taxes and the seller gets non-dilutive capital which they can use to grow. So this winter, Tech Innovation team procured a third party, ESI of Philadelphia, to conduct an economic impact assessment so we could understand what the effect of the last 25 years of the program has been. And when you have a minute, I encourage you to take a look at the report. It's very impressive. 35 pages have gone there. But today, I just wanted to highlight some of the key takeaways we had. So NOL has supported nearly 600 companies, approving over $1.3 billion in credits. The U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics has survival rates benchmarked for these types of companies at 36%. NOL participants came in at 72%. Over half of these companies that have participated are actually still in existence now. We talk direct impact, so companies themselves. NOL companies have employed over 31,000 people and provided more than $4.3 billion in compensation. And then we looked at direct plus indirect, so the other companies that are involved with our participants, we're talking about almost 88,000 jobs and $8.6 billion in wages. And these inflating numbers are higher than what expected should be for these types of companies. And a lot of companies have an annual economic outlook of $15 billion at this point. And when we factor in the indirect, it's probably about $28 billion of annual impact. Tax revenues to the state, NOL companies now at $36 million a year. And with the indirect, it's $715 million. And a key year for us was 2018. So that was actually the tipping point when the total cost for the program actually fell below what the benefit for. So we generate more tax revenue and forgone tax revenue since 2018. At the time of the analysis, NOL had stimulated $2.8 billion in tax revenue on 1.35 tax credits given. That's a net fiscal impact of $1.45 billion. So for every tax dollar that has been forgiven, we now have received two. There's a graph actually that's very interesting within. And to verbalize what that says, costs are linear, going straight, and now we're at the point where revenue to the state is exponential, so the proverbial hockey stick there. That concludes my prepared remarks, and happy to take any questions if folks have some.
And again, those that the bottom bullet points are just tax. They're not taking into account the knock-on effect of employment and income tax that employees are paying
and
everything
just
else. That's just the direct
net benefit. So when we do things for Aspire and Emerge, for example, we're looking at net benefit tests. We are only looking at public sector flows. This happens to be state. This is even more narrow. We look at state, local and county property taxes as well. But in this context, it's just states, a 2-to-1. No, Liz is not, this would be a good time for us to ask for more money. But we'll leave that for another day. In fact, Governor Murphy, as part of the Economic Recovery Act, substantially expanded. Did we double the size of the program?
$60 million, $75 million.
Nearly double. part of the way to double it.
Georgetown, man.
Yeah, exactly. Now you have the Vatican on your side. I can't pick that fight anymore. Exactly. But it was expanded as part of the Economic Recovery Act package as well. So.
And if you look at it over the 25-year life, has it grown dramatically throughout different administrations? Has it held constant?
It's choppy. The administration's cut it way back. So it has been choppy year by year in the report. You know, I think, you know, as Clark's eloquently laid out here, you know, interesting that the timeline that it took for a break even for this, right? We talk about that for innovation all the time, that you have to get it from the long game. The other kind of interesting fact is all of the great work these companies have done as far as advancing cancer treatment, advanced technology, you know, that's not lost either. So really, we were really, really pleased with, you know, that outcome that came here. But I think it's interesting for this board to realize patient capital is critical in this.
Thank you.
Since Kara's not back, I will yield the floor, and I would, if I may, reserve the right decision to ask that Kara.
Do you hold your time? Is that
Senator Booker. I'm no Senator Booker. I'm not prepared. I did not fast for 3 days to get ready.
All right, we're going to move on then to the public comment section of the meeting. I will now open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Daniel Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Each person will be acknowledged to speak and respond in the order of hands raised. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself, provide your comment. All members of the public must remain muted following the public comment portion of the meeting. A staff member may mute you if you are unable to remain muted. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star, then one, to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue to speak and provide comment. We'll now go over NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak. It should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired, and a person may register to speak only once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time available for all those who wish to speak. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I would now like to acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comment at this time. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to speak? Okay. Seeing none, let's go to anyone online. Operator, could you announce if there's anyone online who would like to speak?
Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question by pressing star then two. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press star then one at this time. One moment to see if we have questions on the phone. And I am showing no questions on the phone.
Thank you, operator. I guess we should also, on Teams, is there anyone who would like to make a comment? Raise your hand on the Teams app. Danielle, seeing no one? Okay, we're going to consider the public comment section of the meeting closed. We'll now move to the voting items for today. As we do at every board meeting, we'll give a quick report of the committee meetings that took place between board meetings. The NJEDA Policy Committee met on May 1st and considered several items which will be presented today for action. Some highlights include creation of the Cannabis Business Development Grant Program, allocating funds from the Main Street Finance Program Recovery Fund to support the Small Business Improvement Grant and Lease Grant Programs, two new Strategic Innovation Centers, updates to the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program, and eligibility and funding updates to the Route 80 Business Assistant Grant Program. Staff will present each item as part of today's agenda. Now let's move on with the agenda. Our first item under community development, Aubrey will be presenting on the creation of the NJ Cannabis Business Development or CBD grant.
Thank you, Chairman. Good day, members of the board and my colleagues. I'm Aubrey Flanagan from NJEDA's community development team, and I'm pleased to present the new Cannabis Business Development Grant or CBD grant pilot program for your consideration and approval today. I'll be providing a focused overview to accompany the board memo and product specifications in your packet. Next slide, please. The CBD grant represents the next phase of NJEDA's equity-focused cannabis grant portfolio. It builds on the success of our seed equity and joint ventures programs, programs that helped operators open their doors. The CBD grant now addresses sustainability, providing $75,000 reimbursement grants to help offset early stage costs like compliance, working capital, and operations. Eligibility is tied to possession of an active annual license digital card from the New Jersey Cannabis Regulatory Commission, or the NJCRC. We are starting with a $5 million appropriation from the FY25 Appropriations Act, with requested delegated authority to scale this program with future appropriations specifically for cannabis-related uses or recaptured funds from other cannabis programs. As required by statute, 5% of funds are reserved for applicants in NJCRC-designated impact zones. This pilot balances funding, responsible funding with responsive support for our budding operators. Next slide.
Are we keeping score, by the way?
We're going to run out of
it. Good here. Now we're going to talk about our eligible applicants. This program is non-competitive, but it is structured for strict eligibility. At the time of the application, eligible applicants must possess and provide a valid current NJCRC annual license digital card as per the final recommendation issued by the NJCRC Office of Licensing in either Class 1 cultivator, Class 2 manufacturer, Class 5 retailer, aka dispensaries, or testing labs. Medicinal-only testing labs are considered ineligible. They must be in good standing with the NJCRC, New Jersey Department of Labor and Workforce Development, as well as the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection prior to their approval. A current tax clearing certificate is required to demonstrate the applicant is in good standing with the New Jersey Division of Taxation prior to approval. And any entity awarded an NJEDA cannabis grant that has received funds, so any awardee of our joint ventures or seed equity, are not considered eligible. We are expanding access to new players, putting money into the hands of new individuals and entrepreneurs. Holders of final agency decision acceptance of alternative treatment centers, or ATCs, these are medicinal dispensaries, are not allowed to have this grant either. And we also box out our multi-state operators. These are the backed by well-capitalized investment firms that want to come in and take opportunity from those smaller entrepreneurs. So we are boxing them out. This structure intentionally prioritizes New Jersey-based small businesses most in need of capital access. Next slide. So quickly, I'm going to go over the application and award process. Applications will be accepted on a rolling first-come, first-complete basis for up to 3 years or until funds are fully deployed. Applicants must submit verified proof of eligible expenses incurred within the prior 36 months at the time of application. Eligible expenses include rent payments with executed leases, payroll records, and a wide range of professional services, such as legal, accounting, HR, branding, and security, provided each cost directly supports the compliant operation of a New Jersey cannabis business. Incomplete applications will be administratively withdrawn if not cured within 10 business days, and the award process will go like this. Awardees will receive a one-time reimbursement of $75,000 after execution of the grant agreement, upon which they will enter a 24-month compliance period, which is aligned with NJCRC license requirements. If the business defaults within 12 months, 100% of the grant is going to be recaptured. Between 12 and 24 months, 50% will be recaptured. Awardees must also agree to not pursue an additional cannabis business license or open operations outside of New Jersey during the 24-month compliance period, as that would make them an MSO. And in alignment with NJCRC rules, awardees are further prohibited from selling or transferring their license within 24 months of the grant award date. Finally, this program was deliberately designed as a high-impact, low-risk initiative to responsibly and efficiently deploy state cannabis revenues into equitable business development across New Jersey. That concludes my presentation for today. Happy to take any questions.
How does the recapture work?
So we are entering into a compliance period where annually we're going to check if they are open and operating. If they are not open and operating within the 12 months, 100% of the grant will be recaptured.
Right, but how do we actually, the money's gone, right? We've given them the money.
Right.
Now we have to get it back.
Seek recapture. We have processes within NJEDA to do that.
It's hard to think
about
that for sure.
Right. Yeah. There's no personal guarantee. It's to the business.
Right. Yes.
Is there any statistics on businesses that are just are in New Jersey compared to in multi-states for the cannabis business?
In terms of what statistics are you looking for?
Well, how many businesses are there?
In New Jersey?
Yeah.
There are quite a bit. So we have 283 permitted businesses that are open and operating in New Jersey. And compared to nationally, because there are certain states that have different, I'm not sure about statistic. Does anybody?
Well, how many?
So there are a few states that have, think about Colorado or California, their numbers are automatically going to be higher because they legalized recreational marijuana earlier than New Jersey did.
Sure.
As far as like how long they stay in there.
My question would be, how many companies?
MSOs versus global.
Yeah.
Oh, how many MSOs?
MSOs versus global. So if you stripped out of the 283, if you stripped out the MSOs, how many are left over?
And I'm actually not sure of that number, but it is a considerable amount, I will say,
okay,
already.
Yeah.
Yes. So we really want to make sure that we cap that.
It was something a press picked up on a lot, too, the fact that there were so many owners that were outside of New Jersey. So that's something that we were trying to emphasize, especially with this new iteration of a grant, making sure that they were New Jersey-based, New Jersey homegrown, right? All the things in Jersey.
Okay.
Perfect. Any further questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments?
I would just quickly note, we joke, being fun, all the time. I enjoyed it as much as the next person. Getting to know some of the entrepreneurs that have gotten open, that are thriving, many of whom had interactions with the criminal justice system prior, whose lives are in a completely different trajectory, while making money, doing well, pillars of their community. It's a pretty extraordinary thing that these programs, this investment thesis is pretty extraordinary. Overwhelmingly, people of color, men of color, whose lives are in a very, very different place today because of these kinds of programs, decriminalization and legalization of cannabis.
Great. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Josh.
Thanks. A second?
Fred Dumont, second.
Thank you, Fred. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Well, wait a minute.
There could be
any opposed? Any opposed recusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. All right. Sean, on the utilization of Main Street appropriations.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Sean Dugway. I'm the Assistant Director for Small Business Services. We're going to go over the utilization of FY25 Main Street appropriation. Next slide, please. Staff is requesting the board approve the allocation of the remaining $10 million identified in FY25 budget appropriation to the Main Street Recovery Fund. This funding will support additional approvals for two high-volume products, the Small Business Improvement Grant and the Small Business Lease Grant. The lease grant launched in October of 2021 and offers awards of 20% of annual lease payments for 2 years to commercial locations. The improvement grant launched in February of 2022 and reimburses 50% of eligible costs associated with capital improvements and has a maximum reimbursement of $50,000. Next slide, please. The lease grant has 760 approvals, amounting to $19 million in awarded funding, and the improvement grant has over 2,500 approvals with approximately $66 million in awards, showing the financial impact of the two programs. Combined, we receive hundreds of applications a year with an average grant award of $26,000 for both. Next slide, please. For these approvals, the remaining funding balance is $7 million for the lease grant and less than $14 million for the improvement grant. With over 400 applications in review and over $14 million in total potential awards, the steady influx of weekly applications, the funding is critical in supporting these additional approvals, keeping the application window open and staying capitalized until fiscal year 26. Next slide, please. Both programs have fostered incredible opportunities for small businesses in New Jersey. The Asbury Park Brewery successfully opened a new tap room and offset their lease costs, while Glassworks Crafting Studio of Morristown expanded its capacity by adding new kilns and receiving reimbursement. With the allocation, we will continue to assist small businesses across the state. That concludes my remarks. I'm happy to take questions at this time.
Any questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the utilization of the remaining fiscal 25 Main Street appropriation?
Move, Zoraja.
Second?
Second, Josh.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
I'll have to recuse myself on that. I've got family members, small businesses, just in case.
Okay. Noted. Anyone else on the phone? Any recusals or abstentions or opposition? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved.
Could Chairman Chung, before you leave, one highlight, Sean, in addition to being leaders of our small business effort, also is one of our leads of our military communities, veterans and military families. Employee networking group, and one of the highlights of our trip to the Middle East was when we were in Bahrain. We visited the fleet, which is headquartered in Bahrain. Father the Admiral, who currently leads the fleet, is from New Brunswick. We brought with us challenge coins from our MILCOM, and we brought with them a postcard that Emma transported along the way, all the way to Bahrain from our MILCOM. It was a really nice moment of celebrating 30 or 40 sailors from New Jersey that we got to have lunch with and hang out with and see their bravery up close. Think about the families at home and support them, including yours, Sean. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next on economic transformation, we have three strategic innovation centers to discuss. Tim.
Chairman, good afternoon. It's a pleasure for you today to present staff's recommendation for two strategic innovation center investments in partnership with Nokia America Corporation parent Bell Labs, an industrial research development company that's called Function New Jersey for over 80 years, but will continue to do so. They're new home in New Brunswick in approximately 2029. While the two innovation centers are presented together today, they are structurally separate and are intended to exist independent of each other in the future. But, you know, the adjacency combined it's make all the more successful. First, we are recommending commitment up to $15 million for the New Jersey Bell Labs Venture Studio LLC, including $5 million for operating expenses and $10 million for investment into participating companies. The Venture Studio will seek to commercialize deep tech intellectual property from within Nokia, other universities in the state, and additional sources. The focus is going to be leveraging Nokia's core strengths in microelectronics, AI, advanced manufacturing, compute, next-gen communication. The object is to create 14 companies from within those verticals by identifying high potential intellectual property, installing executive leadership, and executing on a business plan. The studio and fund are going to be managed by the Nokia Venture team, with an MOU in place with Rutgers University and NJIT for additional support, and Nokia will continue to look for additional university partners and academic partners in the coming years. The studio will launch initially at the Bell Labs location in Murray Hill, later relocate again to the H2 facility in New Brunswick, which brings us to our second recommendation, a request for commitment up to $10 million from the NJ Nokia Innovation Center LLC, a real estate partnership with Nokia, subleasing co-working and incubation space in the Innovation Center in New Brunswick. EDA will own 50% of the project and will receive 50% of the rents generated over the 20-year life of the investment. Meanwhile, Nokia will provide 13,500 square feet of office and bench space that comes along with specialized equipment, amenities, personnel, training to companies building out in the aforementioned deep tech frontier technologies, which may include some of our venture companies that graduate from the studio, as well as the broader ecosystem. Ultimately, as mentioned, the adjacency of the Venture Studio and the Innovation Center are envisioned to create a stronger outcome than either alone, with the ability to coalesce entrepreneurs and investors and innovators, at a central location, bringing unique resources to bear. So I'll conclude reiterating our request for approval of a commitment up to $15 million from the New Jersey Bell Labs Venture Studio, LLC, a commitment of up to $10 million from the NJ Nokia Innovation Center, LLC, authorization to the CEO to execute all documents required, including the operating and sign level agreements, and a 4.5% administrative fee to the EA plus associated authority legal costs as allowed by IRF statute. So thank you very much for the consideration. Welcome any questions and support.
Again, Timmons, I think we discussed in committee the innovation set, the Bell Labs Venture Studio. We actually own investments in target companies.
That's correct. Yeah, the majority of our investment dollars go to support those companies coming out of the studio. Yeah.
And then the second one, the Innovation Center, is a real estate investment.
Yeah, so we'll share in the rent distributions on a 50-50 basis.
Right.
Bell Labs celebrates 100th anniversary. The guy saw a picture there of the governor cutting the ribbon on maybe one of these studios, I forget. They had 4 Nobel Prize winners and 3 Turing Prize winners in the audience. So if you'd like to feel dumb, if you're going to hang out at Bell Labs, I certainly did. It was pretty special.
Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko.
Thank you, Robert. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Phil. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motions are approved.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Next on Venture, Michelle on the NJ Innovation Fellows updated scoring procedures and appeal outcomes.
Sorry.
Oh.
One motion for
oh.
Or we
want to
go
back. I think we need two.
Okay. All right, so we need two. All right.
Just the first one you just about last venture.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, so could we hear a motion to approve the Nokia Innovation Center?
Elijah.
Second.
Robert Shimko.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed,
aye.
Recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved.
Good catch, guys. Like when Obama had to get sworn in twice. That would have been embarrassing.
Just
exactly.
Job security for me right here.
Yeah. All right, Michelle.
One second. So I'm here to present the latest update to the Jersey Innovation Fellows Program. My name is Michelle Martinez. So the team is here today seeking approval to revise the program scoring procedures in order to more effectively assess the New Jersey Innovation Fellows application. We can go on to the next slide. The proposed changes are based on insights gained from cohorts 1 as well as cohorts 2. So for a little bit of background and update on the cohorts, cohort 1 with 10 companies has been underway for about 15 months, and the group has successfully completed about 60% of the mentorship program. All companies are active, intact, and all are seeking additional private funding. Cohort 2, consisting of 8 companies, 10 with today's approval, is expected to begin the mentorship program in July. And the AI cohort application notes that they expected to open in June with approvals for 4 to 5 awards sought in the fall. Lastly, planning is underway for the fall application window for the final cohort, where we're expecting to approve 3 to 4 companies. So this would bring total new companies created under the program to about 27, with about 81 New Jersey-based jobs created by the end of 2025. So for our first recommendation, we'll move on to the first slide, to the next slide, excuse me. The next one after that, sorry. Yep. Great. So we propose updating the scoring procedures for the program, specifically removing the Diversity Finance Advisory Board Committee from the New Jersey Innovation Fellow scoring process. The change is intended to streamline evaluations and ensure consistency across all applicant assessments. Moving forward, all applicants will be scored by the same internal evaluation committee, and scores will be averaged and ranked from highest to lowest to determine the top ranked applications. Next, we recommend expanding the number of awardees in cohort 2 from 8 to 10. Upon review of the Innovation Fellow scoring process, findings indicate that appellants Flovit Technologies and Uplift Media would have been included among the top awardees based solely on previously prescribed process where the Diversity Finance Advisory Board makes the final decision on scoring and applicant ranking. Consequently, we recommend increasing the total award amounts to accommodate these necessary changes. Instead of awarding 7, instead of removing award 7 and 8, we propose including these 2 additional applicants, increasing the total award amount from $2.8 million to $3.45 million. And with that, thank you for your time on these matters, and I will now take any questions that you have.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? How many? Are in cohort 1?
There's 10 cohort companies, which created about 30 jobs in the first cohort.
So going to 10 is the same in cohort 2?
Yeah.
Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can we hear a motion to approve?
Josh.
Thanks, Josh. Second?
Second, Cruz. Marcia.
I'll take Marcia on that one. Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the recommendations are approved. Authority matters. Bruce, on revisions to the Route 80 Business Assistant Grant Program.
Can I interrupt, sir? Kara has joined us.
Ah,
you would. Kara, I'm going to embarrass you for a moment. Those of us who were at the ceremony with Netflix comments, you heard litany of wonderful words about Kara. If anything, they undersold the story. Kara is one of the most extraordinary people I've had the privilege of working with, calling a friend, knowing in my entire career. The degree to which she is pulling off a series of miracles here at the Ford is nothing short of extraordinary. And I remember very well a call with the governor, Joe Kelly at the time, or Kelly at the time, which it was described to the governor that it'd be great if Netflix came to Fort Monmouth, but gosh, it's like, it's 3 towns, it's state-owned land, there's 16,000 boards, it's, at the time it was 2020, it's like there's a pretty bad pandemic happening right now, like this is off the high dive into a little cup of water. The governor's like, great, thanks for letting me know, go get it done. I called Kara and said, well, gotta figure this out. She said, it's good news, I already figured it out, I know how we're going to do it. Lo and behold, 4.5 years later, here we are breaking ground on Netflix. It was going to be the Fort Monmouth story is not just a Netflix story, but it is certainly the centerpiece of Rebirth is, which is a passion project for Kara, who's been born in town, this breeds this place. And if it was decided tomorrow we needed to mount a mission to Mars, we had to leave tomorrow not knowing where we're going or how we're getting there, round up the great people, because we're going to need talent, Kara would be a very early phone call for anybody who was thinking about it the right way. So if you all would, please join me in giving Kara a big. Now, Bruce, tell us about your problems, your sinkholes.
Definitely not as fun as something.
Well, Bruce is also pretty good.
At the beginning, you were saying he was
a rat. Yeah, but
I
care.
So I'm back up for the Rudy grant program. So what we're doing, what we're asking for here is, if you remember last month when we came to the board, we talked about various tiers. I mean, the first tier was tier one, which was 5 miles. From Route 80, exit 34. What we said was we narrowed it down to Morris County because that's where it was, that's what the executive order had, a state of emergency. So what we did was we limited it to Morris County. What we're coming to you here now is to expand it, not only Morris County, but the other counties that surround that 5 mile radius. So just that 5 miles, Sussex County, I think it's the biggest one, but there's just a couple of towns in there that would benefit from this program if we just took off the Morris County piece. So what we're bringing for you today is another $500,000 from our economic recovery fund to assist the businesses within 5 miles of exit 34 on Route 80 in any county that that might be. So it's just a minor revision. Everything else will remain the same. We will launch the application on May 29th. We'll be looking for the 7 days that we did for the tier one originally. And then we are very confident that $500,000 we're putting into this will be able to fund all of those businesses that might have been impacted. That's it. That's your request here. If you just go to the next slide, I know we already talked about this, so we already talked about the 818 total applications. Let's go to one more slide. So this here, if you look to the right, you can kind of see the heat map of like where most of our applicants have applied from. So that this kind of gives you the idea of what our application pool and what our tiers are. What you're seeing here is actually a dashboard, Power BI dashboard. So I'm putting a plug in for our next vote that's coming. But all this data becomes live system, right? So all I have to do, and Danielle saw it this morning, I hit refresh on this and I can see when disbursements are made, and then these numbers will automatically update because it plugs into our system. It'll change all of the graphics, it'll change everything above up top as well. So this is how we monitor the program. I can tell a ton of data. Ton of information I can drill down from here, but it's a lot of feed into our system, and this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg of what we're trying to do as we relate to all these innovative ways that we're trying to work here with AI, Power BI, with all of our data. But as I say to everybody, good data in, good data out, crappy data in, crappy data out, right? So we need to make sure that we have the right data points and everything is in good order. But this stuff is going to be a good little visual for everyone to see. Any questions? Happy to take them.
Any questions, comments? So it's the approval is to allocate another $500,000 and expand to
beyond Morris County
to something
in the 5 miles off
Sussex County. Yeah. Okay. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Cruz.
Thank you. Second.
Second, Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank
you. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thank you. Now, Emma, as a lead-in, having been set up, this is recommendation for contract extension for business and information technology consulting and advisory services.
Yes, Bruce and I didn't coordinate that at all. The members of the board are asked to approve extension of the business and information technology consulting and advisory services contract currently awarded to the Boston Consulting Group, for a total value of $2.3 million for an additional 5 months of support. If approved, this extension will authorize BCG to commence phase four of their current work stream for ISCOOP, focusing on the tactical implementation of the authority-wide data roadmap while upscaling and identifying a long-term operating model for the EDA's data team. Focusing primarily on data governance, the final phase of support from BCG will further streamline and modernize how EDA collects, manages, and uses data, ensuring the authority to make more informed decisions and deliver programs more effectively. As a recap, in April of 2024, the EDA engaged BCG under the state's M4010 contract to support IT transformation and data strategy. The engagement has progressed through three phases, each building towards a stronger, more scalable IT and data foundation. Phase one and two of BCG's workstream focus on building strong IT foundations, with BCG helping to develop and implement a functional roadmap for the IT systems environment, ITS, aligned with business needs and increased service demand. Specifically, this effort focused on improving transparency of IT offerings, streamlining service requests, and building structured feedback loops to improve service delivery between staff and IT. Most recently, BCG embarked on phase three of their work, aiming to establish a data strategy for ITS by designing an agency-wide data program and roadmap, spending 18 months of identified opportunities for support, launching version one of the Power BI dashboard, as you just saw, delivering training and documentation to support its internal implementation, and onboarding a dedicated data lead to ensure sustained execution and oversight. Within this proposed phase four scope of work, BCG will support the implementation of a formal data governance council, including launching a functional data council to oversee and implement data integrity practices and standards. They will also document a data standardization approach and develop a consistent taxonomy for key systems, beginning with CRM, to reduce inconsistency, streamline reporting, and ensure reliable data is available across all departments. In parallel, BCG will co-develop a new Power BI dashboard with internal staff to support program evaluation goals and support the long-term sustainability. This phase includes the design and piloting of data literacy programs and the development of KPIs to measure data governance effectiveness. Together, these activities will help EDA address long-standing data challenges, such as inconsistent reporting, unclear ownership, and fragmented visibility into program outcomes, while strengthening internal capacity to manage data independently. By embedding this work within existing system and teams, phase four ensures that the authority can scale its use of data to make faster, more informed decisions, support operational transparency, and deliver more impactful. Following BCG's submission of the proposed scope of work for phase four, the authority initiated a best and final offer, BAFO, process to ensure competitive pricing and value for the proposed services. After several rounds of communication with the vendor, the total price submitted by BCG for the work team was $2.3 million. While BCG did not reduce their pricing during the BAFO process, that was because the phase four scope was initially valued at $2.9 million and had already been reduced by $600,000 during detailed scoping discussions with authority staff, so their best and final was at $2.3 million value. So after a thorough review by our chief operating officer, our chief of staff, and our procurement department, the scope of work provided by BCG was determined to be the most advantageous to the EDA during price out of factor. So with that, we'll open up any questions.
Chairman, just to underscore two things. One, as Emma said, this is the fourth and final phase of BCG work. And then as we talk about program impact evaluation, this data governance work is vital to accelerating the ability for us to gather what we need to know and have a source of truth that we can rely on for evaluating what we do here.
Great. Any comments, questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? And Emma, you promised it's the last. Can we hear a motion to approve?
Pinky swear.
Move it. Thank you. That was Josh. Can we hear a second?
Robert Chimko.
Thank you, Robert. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next, Ryan on NJ Green Bank board members.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. This item is a request that the board approve two actions related to the governance of the New Jersey Green Bank. The first is to renew the board term of Ron McCallum, Executive Vice President for Innovation Impact at the EDA, as an EDA-affiliated director of the Green Bank for a new term of 3 years. As some of you may recall, the Green Bank bylaws that this board approved last year indicated that the three initial EDA-affiliated directors of the Green Bank Board should serve staggered 1 year, 2 year, and 3 year terms. This request for renewal would specifically extend Ron's initial 1 year term. The second action requested of the board is to approve the appointment of Lisa Almeida, EDA's chief counsel, as an additional EDA-affiliated director of the Green Bank Board. The Green Bank Board previously approved this appointment, but since it involves an EDA-affiliated director, the consent of this board is being asked to ensure compliance with the Green Bank bylaws. With the approval of both of these requests, the Green Bank board would be comprised of four EDA affiliated directors and two public directors. The last remaining public director needed to complete the seven-member board will not require the EDA board approval and instead will be added at a future Green Bank board meeting. Thank you all for your time and I'm happy to address any questions.
Any questions? comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Can I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Cruz.
Thank you.
Second.
Second, Phil, second. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Thank you.
Yeah.
Next, to matters considered at the Incentives Committee. The NJEDA Incentives Committee met on April 30th and considered four items which are being presented for action today. An amendment to the New Jersey Reassigning In-State Employees, or NJRISE, program. A policy update for the Cultural and Arts Facility Expansion, or CAFE. Under the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program, staff presented recommendations to approve the readoption of the specialty adopted rule amendments and new rules, and a film tax credit application. Staff will present each of these items today. So moving on, the first item is Tomasita on the policy amendment on NJRISE.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. So the New Jersey Redefining In-State Employees is a program to incentivize businesses to reassign New Jersey residents who are working in another state to a New Jersey location. The grant is equal to the amount of New Jersey gross income tax withholdings of the reassigned employees during one tax year of the business, not to exceed $500,000. Currently, businesses during the application process must select the current tax year, the current year of application, or the subsequent tax year for purposes of calculating the gross income tax withholding for the award amount. Today, we are requesting that the award approve a policy amendment in selecting the tax year of application or one of the two subsequent tax years for their award disbursement under the program, contingent upon the business's established tax filing method. The policy amendment will be retroactive, extending to existing applicants currently in the review process. Businesses currently are allowed to move eligible employees immediately after they submit the application, regardless of the tax year chosen for their award. With this amendment, if they choose a later tax year to calculate their award, they will be required to provide a six-month progress update. This update would confirm the applicant's intentions regarding employee reassignments or detail any that have already occurred. As it stands, four applications have been submitted with one approval, two under review, and one withdrawal. There is a projected 65% ROI for the state of New Jersey as reflected on our chart, meaning that for the $1.3 million in New Jersey RISE awards, the New Jersey will receive 2.1 in gross income tax withholdings. At this time, I welcome any questions.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Cruz.
Thank you. Second?
Thank you,
Josh.
For our-
Thank you, Matthew. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Elizabeth on the CAFE update.
Number
1,
drive-through
CAFE
update. So first is a little background, just the slide in front of you. This is a state-funded program, tax credit. It evolved from the Community Anchor Program, which was in the Economic Recovery Act, and it was created via a conditional veto by Governor Murphy with $1.2 billion that has been allocated. The board approved this program and the rules at the January 22nd board meeting earlier this year. This is considered a competitive program, and we just opened our first round on April 7th, and we're planning to close that round on June 6th. Because of that, that means we have no approval to date. The program is really designed to incentivize broad-scale capital development, rehabilitation for arts and culture projects, and there's a minimum project size of $5 million. This tax credit covers 100% of eligible costs and is capped at $75 million per project. Next slide. The purpose of this memo is really to clarify the eligibility criterion for how we determine projects that had started construction before applying to the program and how they can demonstrate that the projects could not have been completed without the award of the tax credit. So really, we're aiming to support those projects that are either stalled or at risk of stalling. And we wanted to bring this to the board at this point to really ensure fairness in the competitive process. Projects that have been started by what I would call an unrelated party, so not by the applicant or an affiliate, those are considered new projects. So this policy isn't referring to those projects. New projects could always come in. This is about projects that were started by either the applicant or one of their affiliates. Next slide. On this slide, I have language from the statute and the program rules. The important part to look at is the part that's bolded, which is the same in both the statute and the rules, that says that the project could not be completed without the award of tax credits under this program. So that construction had not commenced, but if we find that the project could not be completed without award of tax credits under this program, that would be an allowable exception. So we're really looking to define what that is. Next slide. And this is the policy recommendation for how we determine that. So first, the applicant is going to need to demonstrate that they had unexpected construction costs that had increased by at least 10% or more after they started their construction. That construction has to have started after the date the Economic Recovery Act was enacted. They must have had a credible financing plan when they started construction. And they have to also be unable to fundraise for that increased construction cost within a reasonable time frame. The award amount is capped at that delta between the prior budgeted cost at the time construction started and that increasing cost. We are then further constraining that by deducting the sources that have been raised to date or expected to be raised within 12 months of board approval. And then we're also deducting sources from the original construction budget. However, equity will still be calculated on the full amount of total project costs, including the prior budgeted construction costs. We are also requiring prevailing wage on the prior work, including that public works registration, contractor registration requirement for prior work. So that's going to limit the number of eligible projects that can come in under this. And we think that's an important concept in this. We also continue to have, and this is by the statute, a $5 million requirement. And this, under rules, we determined that the capital investment is equal to eligible project costs. So therefore, you have to have $5 million in eligible project costs. The award cap was included in here as well. Because we did wanted to prevent somebody from withdrawing and reapplying for a higher amount after they started construction. Next slide. We recommend that because this is a competitive program, we're in round one right now, again, closing on June 6th, that we implement this policy after that round closes. And we do have a new round planned for the summer, possibly as early July, pending the application update. That concludes my remarks. I appreciate your time and attention and consideration for this.
What kind of, go ahead. So you.
The prior construction paying for prevailing wage, how are you going to prove that?
They are going to have to provide documentation just like anyone else would have to for future construction. So that is going to limit how many people are going to be eligible for the program. Somebody that already has state assistance will already be providing that information. So that's the kind of project we think are most likely to come.
But they'll have to certify payroll just like everybody else.
Yeah, I know, but Tim, I'm going to tell you, certify payroll, here you go. That's certified payroll, right? I mean, how is the EDA making sure that those workers actually receive the prevailing wage? Because I can give you a sheet of paper that says that they were paid. That's what we have a problem with all the time.
And we have that potential risk all the time, which is why we work really closely with labor. And I have a view with them to partner with their. Of course, we have a We have a labor compliance department that does nothing but this.
Okay.
So that risk exists prospectively as well.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we've gotten down to very few problems with that on our projects at least.
Yeah.
Not done, but evergreen challenge.
And on this, it's not just the wage, but also that they would have been registered contractors at the time the work was being done, too.
Have you received applications from the April program, the April launch?
We have a lot of applications that have started. Nobody has completely submitted, and that's to be expected. Mm-hmm. Usually in these competitive programs, people don't hit that submit button until a day or two before the deadline. Mm-hmm. And most actually submitted on the deadline.
And what are you seeing so far?
A wide range of projects. Some of the folks had talked to us prior to us opening around. Some are ones that we hadn't heard from before. I don't know, am I able to speak freely about which projects?
I'm broad.
Yeah, you don't have to.
Yep.
And how, I guess, and the other question I had is, with this amendment, how do you see that changing? In other words, are we going to have overcrowding in this category? This would seem like a pretty specific category, right?
This is going to be a very limited pool of applicants. Again, I really think it's going to bring out folks that already have some other kind of state funding and then experience something that is causing their project to be at risk of stalling because they saw like a big increase in construction costs, plus aren't able to fund the incentive themselves. Pretty small.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty high.
Yeah. I think it's a very small pool based on timing issues. We also anticipate this program may go to a open program that's not a competitive solicitation. So even more, influencing why we don't think this is a large thing that we have to stop for.
I'm just curious, how do you quantify, how do you determine that they can't fund any additional dollars?
We are going to put in different requirements. One of them is going to be a certification by the CEO or equivalent that they could not fundraise.
Well, that's going to be based on cost. If you're a nonprofit that says we need to raise $100 million and you've never raised more than $1 million, we're going to say, well, first of all, that's not a credible fundraising plan. If you've raised $100 million and you say we can't raise another million more, probably also that's
questionable.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be based on priors.
Right. Okay.
Great. Any other comments or questions?
Chair, I have one. So the board approval under the first phase, is this policy to more liberally, I don't want to say more liberally construe the statute and the program rules, but pretty specifically, I guess, is the current phase one program, are we narrowly construing the statute and regulation?
I wouldn't think it was overly narrow, but, we had spoken with Deputy Attorney General looked at ways, like, are there any other ways that we could broaden this any more than it already is? And we found this pathway, and we thought this was a good use for doing that.
Okay.
One of the things to add on to that, the statute allows us to look at projects under construction, but without criteria for how you do that, you're susceptible to arbitrary and capricious type concerns, right? So we have criteria now that we can use.
Right. So currently under the first phase, since we didn't have the criteria, we're kind of not in those applications.
Exactly, right. So those applications have no basis.
We're somewhat narrowly construing the statute of regulations. Okay, yeah, that's anticipated.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, just before you speak, just want to acknowledge that Jamara Sermon is here for the board meeting will be voting.
Thank you. It's a seamless transition.
Catch me.
Hearing no further questions, could I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Robert Schenke.
Thank you, Robert. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Recusal for me. Yeah.
Please. Can you state the reason for the refusal?
Yes, there's an interested party in the CAFE program that I'm involved with.
Thank you, Marcia.
Okay, noted.
Mm-hmm. Can we vote?
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions other than Marcia? Okay, the motion is approved. Thank you. Okay. All right, film and digital tax credit. Matt.
Everybody?
Good afternoon.
Members are asked to approve the attached readoption of the February 2024 specially adopted rule amendments and new rules regarding state film and digital media tax credit program pursuant to the six most recent statutes. Next slide, please. Overview of the program, for those of you not familiar, established originally with the signing of the Murphy's Economic Recovery Act of 2020. The Film and Digital Media Jobs Act has expanded significantly over the past 6 years. The program now offers a total of $430 million allocated annually across several allocation categories that we talked about coming up. Initially, it is now $100 million annually for the Film Tax Credit Program or Legacy Tax Credit or Vanilla Tax Credit, as we call it.
It's a delightful flavor, but certainly.
Which offers a 35% base tax credit with reductions for shooting within the 30-mile radius of Columbus Circle. The Digital Media Tax Credit Program has a $30 million annual allocation and offers a 30% base tax credit with a 5% bonus for expenses incurred with Southern New Jersey-based vendors. And there's also now a post-production-only credit within the Digital Media Program that makes available a 35 to 40% tax credit for post-production activities incurred in the state. The program made three designations available for studio partners, and these are studios who commit to occupy at least 250,000 square feet for a period of at least 10 years or more. This would be Netflix or Lionsgate so far. There are also three designations available for film lease partner facilities. These are studio operations also of at least 250,000 square feet, only for a period of at least 5 years, committed to the state. Currently, we have one approved film lease partner, and that facility is up in planned for Bayonne under 1888 Studios. Subsequent projects submitted by designated studio partners can make use of a $150 million annual allocation, which allows for up to a 40% tax credit on production expenses incurred in the state. Productions who lease and film that space located at a designated film lease partner facility can be considered what's called a film lease production company. These projects submitted by these entities are allowed to submit for up to a 40% tax credit, and that also has a $150 million annual allocation. All these categories also have diversity plan bonuses available, which range from 2 to 4%. Next slide, please. This is a brief timeline of where we are and kind of where we started. The rulemaking process has been ongoing for quite some time. Back on August 1st, 2022, EDA published proposed amendments and new rules in the normal course of rulemakings pursuant to changes enacted by several bills, including PL 2019, Chapter 506, PL 21, Chapter 160, and PL 2021, Chapter 367. This proposal was allowed to expire after Governor Murphy signed PL 2023, Chapter 97 into law, which amended the program further and allowed EDA to specially adopt rules effective immediately. The authority filed special adoption and concurrently proposed amending rules and new rules for the program on February 26, 2024, pursuant to the legislative amendments from at that time, those five bills. And this was published in the Register on April 1st, 2024. Based on that submission, EDA received significant public comments. 2 months later, while drafting responses and incorporating changes based on those comments received, the program legislation was amended again when the governor signed PL 2024. Chapter 33 on July 10th, 2024. On December 3rd, 2024, the authority requested an extension to the expiration date of the rules, which was approved on January 14th of this year, which pushed the expiration of that special adoption out to February 22nd, 2026. A lot of time for the staff to incorporate rule language based on this new law as well. In accordance with EO 63, the authority posted draft rule amendments for informal public comment on April 9th. The authority received several comments from three separate commenters.
Staff made several clarifications to the rule language based on this feedback, including adding a definition of television series to establish that each episode of a series would need to be at least 22 minutes in length. We added language to make clear that if a studio partner who is occupying space at a designated film use partner facility, that studio partner could also sublease its space out to other unrelated entities, and those entities could actually receive benefits as a film lease production company. We also added language to the definition we added a new definition for film completion to incorporate comments regarding what formats will be considered a final element to determine what and when the film was completed. Next slide, please. The attached readoption in the agenda today includes comments and responses to comments received previously and addresses historical, legislative, and policy changes, as well as changes based on the newest law. This includes a one-time transfer of $300 million from the Emerge Aspire program to the legacy film category, amending the diversity plan provisions for digital media, increasing it to a flat 4% bonus. They added several new definitions based on the new legislation and policy decisions, including but not limited to deferred compensation, film completion, qualified wage and salary payments, television series, vintage year, an independent post-production company, digital media content, highly compensated individuals, the definition of incurred in New Jersey, and the definition of qualified digital media content production expenses. The readoption also clarifies some of the application submission requirements needed for an application to be deemed complete by the authority, and when a film would be considered to be completed. The readoption establishes a relationship between the defined terms of commitment period and eligibility period for studio partners, and we added provisions surrounding recapture scenarios for studio partners and film lease partner facilities. Next slide. This is a summary of those recapture provisions and some of the policy decisions. As background, initially in PL 2020, Chapter 156, created designations for studio partners and film lease partners, as well as separate allocation categories and tax credits. These entities could receive increased tax credit benefits on their subsequent film project submissions in exchange for multi-year commitment to occupy large studio facility developments in the state. Additionally, the law established requirements for those studio partners and film lease partners to be subject to incentive agreements, which would include certain recapture provisions if those entities were to be found to be in default of its commitment to the state. The proposed new rules establish several policy decisions not specified in the statute regarding those commitments and potential instances of recapture. For studio partners specifically, these designated studios commit to occupy, again, 200,000 square feet for 10 years. If the facility is found to be in default of that commitment, the authority may recapture the excess benefit the studio partner receives on a basis of its designation. This excess benefit is only the tax credit amounts the project received on a basis of that designation, and they wouldn't go back to zero, just based back to that vanilla amount. For film lease, additionally, we would also, any projects that were kind of in between, if they're found to be in default of a approved project but not yet issued a credit, instead of fully forfeiting that amount, we would just move them into that legacy category. For film lease partner facilities, these designated facilities, again, must commit to at least 250,000 square feet for 5 years. If the designated facility is found to be in default of its commitment, the authority would recapture from the facility operator or owner any excess benefit amounts that film lease production companies, again, those are its tenants, that they received on the basis of the designation of the facility. Similar to studio partners, this recapture, again, would only be the excess benefit amount, not going all the way back to zero. Included in the rules is a provision that would establish a 12-month grace period from when the authority would seek recapture on issued credits. For studio partners leasing space at a film lease partner facility, this grace period would be within the 12 months following that studio partner's designation approval. And for film lease production companies who lease space at a designated facility, that would be 12 months after they execute the lease at that designated facility. Both designations, if there have been any approvals on any projects that have not yet been issued credits, those approvals would be terminated on that designation and processed again as if it was a legacy tax credit.
The future board memos and approval letters for those projects under those designations will include this excess benefit amount to clearly show which amount of the tax credit is subject to recapture. And just as a reminder, there is no recapture for legacy or digital media projects. Since they are approved based on the initial amount, and then they have to prove that they actually incur those expenses. Next slide, please. Moving on to other changes included in the most recent bill, specifically around digital media, there was a creation of a post-production credit, which kind of split out the digital media side of the program. It creates two additional eligibility pathways for the digital media program, specifically involving post-production activity within the state. Applicants can be eligible for up to 35% of digital media credits if they incur at least $500,000 in post-production expenses through an independent post-production company. Additionally, any post-production expenditures incurred by a designated studio partner, they can also be eligible for up to 40% for that activity. And as mentioned previously, there's also a 4% diversity bonus on top of those amounts. I know that was a lot, and we've been going through this for a while, but happy to answer any questions.
Any high-profile studio projects recently started in New Jersey?
I think Cameron might be aware. I'm sure she might have been working. Okay.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, so hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the readoption of the February 2024 specially adopted rule amendments and new rules for the Garden State Film and Digital Media Tax Credit? Thank you, Josh. Second?
Second, Charla.
Thank you, Charles. Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next, a film tax credit.
I have more film for you guys. I'll not go through the summary again, if you want me to. For consideration today is a product submitted by TCS Louisiana Productions 5, Inc. for Deliver Me From Nowhere. The team has completed the review of the application and recommends the approval for this project under the Film Tax Credit Program. Deliver Me From Nowhere, also going by the alias Husker, is a feature film starring Jeremy Allen White about the life and rise of Bruce Springsteen. Film shot in many different towns in the northern part of the state, from Asbury Park, Newark, and even out to Rockaway. As part of the eligibility criteria for credits under the program, a production must meet one of two expense eligibility thresholds. The first threshold is more than 60% of the total production expenses are incurred through authorized New Jersey vendors. The second is they must exceed at least $1 million in qualified film production expenses in a single tax year. This project meets both thresholds with 67% spent in New Jersey and includes a total qualified film production expense amount of $41.8 million. This project is getting a 2% diversity bonus worth $836,644 for a total award of $14,962,705. We have an updated taxpayer certificate for this applicant. All agency checks and legal reviews are complete and clear. I'm happy to answer any questions on this subject.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Move the lodge.
Thank you, Phil. Second?
Robert.
Thank you, Robert. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? So hearing none, the motion is approved. Thank you, Matt. Real estate, Charles, you want to say a few words about the committee meeting?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The EDA Real Estate Committee met on May 1st to review an item that is proceeding to the board today, and that item is an MOU with the NJDEP to permit the authority to collaborate, plan, design, and construct phase two of the Liberty State Park Revitalization Plan, Hudson County. I think Heather Castelli will present the board memo today to this board. Thanks.
Thank you, Vice Chairman.
Members of the board, good afternoon. My name is Heather Castelli. I'm a senior project officer within the real estate and infrastructure division at the authority. Also with me from the infrastructure division is John Bonino. I'll be able to help answer questions today. So this is my first time presenting in the forum, and I appreciate the opportunity to introduce the Liberty State Revitalization Program. Why are we here? We're here today to request that the members approve an MOU between the authority and the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection to engage a construction manager to construct phase two of the program. The language of this MOU has been reviewed and approved by both parties, as well as the Office of the Attorney General. Some background on this request. Over the past several years, Liberty State Park in Hudson County has been in a state of development and revitalization. The park's development has been advanced with the formal launch of the revitalization program. The program explores the ways in which the park can better meet the needs of New Jersey residents and its visitors. The program is a three-phase plan where the authority will only be delivering phase two. For the authority to deliver any other portions of the program, an MOU amendment would be necessary. As the delivery partner for phase two, the authority will procure a construction manager to develop the four priority areas known as Gateway, Marina Green, Terminal Plaza, and the Train Shed. Acting as the phase two delivery partner is the authority's primary goal or role, while NJDEP is primarily responsible for sourcing project funding. Regarding funding, phase two will be funded with both federal and state monies, with $20 million of American Rescue Plan Act funds and $35.8 million of state debt proceeds and prevention funds. All four of the priority areas can be funded by either federal or state sources. Federal funding must be fully expended by December 31st, 2026, and state funds must be expended by July 31st, 2027, although there's an ability to further extension of the state funds. Funding will be transferred from NJDEP to the authority in tranches, with the first tranche to be sent within 14 days of the MOU effective date. That disbursement plan is detailed out in the MOU. Next steps, construction of phase two is anticipated to begin in quarter four, 2025, and to achieve this, the authority will seek vendors through the procurement of a construction manager. The solicitation for the construction manager is anticipated to commence in June 2025. Once the construction manager is selected, the infrastructure team will return to the board later in the year for approval for the construction manager award and also to establish the phase two budget. Again, phase two construction will begin quarter four 2025 with final completion slated for mid-2027. I did include in the second slide an illustration of the phase two improvements to the park and a location map for orientation. There's also a video link embedded in that slide to master plan on the DEP website for reference. So thank you for your time, and we're open to any questions the members may have.
Chairman, just to underscore, so Heather and John, they're part of our longstanding infrastructure team that was delivering the Wimport very successfully. Heather personally was in charge of the main substation project and did an excellent job in delivering that part of the project. So we've recently merged them into our real estate group, and this is an example of a project that sort of broadens our expertise and portfolio and how we can leverage those skills throughout the state.
And what's our economic participation in this?
We are the project, we're the project delivery partner. We're not contributing.
So are we getting paid for that?
Yes, we are getting paid. We're taking on the service.
So we're essentially the manager of the construction manager.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I'd add is, like I said, there's been a lot of discussion and debate over the years about Liberty State Park and what to do with it and how it should be developed and revitalized and all that. This does not change any of the sort of standing consensus around that. This is just effort to partner with DEP, and shout out to Liz, John, and everybody at DEP for partnering with us on this, but this does not change the program, this doesn't alter plan, et cetera.
And this has been approved,
what
they're doing here.
Correct.
Okay, anyone on the phone, questions or comments, or in the room? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
You got a second?
Okay, I'll second it.
All right. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Tim, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have in your pack, I believe, 6 or 7 delegated authority memos. I will proceed to read them all to you now. Chapter one, no, okay. But you do see a ton of activity on things like child care, continued approvals there, lots of activity on our leasing and real estate related activities that's gearing up for hopefully June items to purchase a number of parcels from transit that we would then seek to redevelop. So lots of in, a lot of outs in all this, including some of the programs that almost never come to this table, like the hazardous discharge program, underground storage tank program, but see the work that happens between these meetings, in addition to all the work that happens. Happy to take any questions on that. Also happy to yield to.
Any questions, comments for Tim? Any other business before us? Tim, anything you want to say?
Thank you all for being here. Again, thanks. It's a banner day in lots of regards. Productive agenda here, and obviously a massive milestone a couple hundred yards away from here, and lots more to do.
Yeah, and thank you.
Work.
Thank you for, as Tim said, for amending your schedules and locations. So thank you to the board. With that, could I hear a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Thank you, Phil. Second? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none, the motion is approved. That concludes the meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you, operator.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using Verizon Conferencing. You may now disconnect.